Welcome to the Remote Works Podcast.
Discussing the culture, experience, and community surrounding remote work. I'm Ari Winokur.
And I'm Jonathan Sharp.
Let's kick off this episode.
Today, our featured guest is Jamin Holmgren, who is the COO and one of three founders of web and mobile app development shop Infinite Red, headquartered in Portland, Oregon. Infinite Red works with clients in over 8 countries internationally and has a team of 22 and runs a fully distributed organization. During this episode, we'll talk with Jamin about his experience personally working remote, as well as his experience running a distributed organization. Jamin, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Jonathan. Really appreciate you having me on.
Excellent. So you want to give us a little blurb about yourself?
Yeah, sure. So I'm the chief operating officer, one of the three founders of Infinite Red. And I live near Portland, Oregon, in actually Vancouver, Washington. And I'm married. I have 4 kids and live on about 3 acres. So I'm not in the city. I'm kind of out slightly rurally, but it's maybe like 20 minutes from Portland.
And I think that the acreage requires a riding lawnmower. Is that true?
That's true. When we built here, we moved in May, and when I built, I had to buy a riding lawnmower. Luckily, I also have an 11-year-old boy who functions as a remote control. I can just put him on it and point out the direction to go, and he does it.
Oh, that is. I would not have hated that growing up. I mowed lawns and had a lawn mowing business, but it was the push mower kind and was not as much fun.
Me too.
So I started remote work back in 2008. And one of the things that I learned is you have to have a why. What's your core reason for the desire to work remote? Can you tell us a little bit about what your why is?
Yeah, I would say if you kind of boil it down to the core reason, it would really be about my family. Obviously, I have kids and my wife, and it's nice to just be at home. Like if I go to, you know, get a snack or a drink or lunch or something, I'm typically walking through, you know, my kids, unless they're at school or something. But they're there, and my wife's there, and it's just nice. I really enjoy that part of working remotely.
So, Jamin, let's talk about travel. Do you have to travel often, or does travel play into the whole remote thing for you, or do you kind of stick at home?
You know, we were a little bit unsure about whether we would have to do a lot of traveling when we first started the business, but honestly, we haven't had to do too much. I do a quarterly in-person meeting with my two co-founders, so we'll fly to typically Las Vegas, where our CEO lives. So we'll, you know, we'll work together for a couple of days just to kind of stay in touch. So once a quarter, I'll fly over there. We do fly everybody into one location, you know, for like an all team, session for a work week. So there's some travel there, but as far as clients, projects, things like that, we really don't travel hardly at all. We try to do as much as we can through video calls instead.
So can you give us an overview of how you started your company, which I believe was back in 2005, and kind of the history of it to where it is today?
Yeah, sure. So my dad worked in construction and I started working in construction as well. So I was working for a home builder here in the Pacific Northwest. And I was in charge of the website because I was, you know, one of the more technical people. And, you know, this was, 2005. And he was just really unresponsive, really not very good at customer service. He was a fine programmer, but he just, you know, was terrible at this sort of thing. And so I thought, you know what, I love programming. I've been doing it since I was 12. And I think I can do the business part of it better. And I know he's making good money. So, I'm just going to give this a shot. And so in 2005, I quit the home builder business and I started just doing websites initially. And then over time, I started hiring new, I think I hired my first employee in 2008 or so, and just kind of gradually started adding to my team. I eventually, I was working at home at the time when I first started, and then in 2009 got an office and was in the office until really this year when I started working remotely again. So then in 2015, I merged with another company called Infinite Red. My company before had been named ClearSight. And so ClearSight and Infinite Red, we merged the two companies into one, and that's where my two co-founders came from. They were partners in Infinite Red originally. And because we were doing so much work together, it was sort of like, hey, you know, we do a lot of work together, a lot of projects together. Why don't we just try it out, see if we can make this one thing? And that's worked out really well.
All right. So overall, you hear a lot of discussion about remote DNA, meaning that the organization is built from the ground up with that idea of being remote as part of the whole culture of the company. I mean, was this the case with your original company, with Infinite Red, or did you kind of start out, you said you got an office, did you start out with people in the office and then eventually kind of work out into a remote culture?
Yeah, so when I got the office, everybody worked at the office, and I just kind of built my team there. Up to about 12 people were in the office at the peak. And then we started doing more remote work because I was always pretty open to the idea. But it wasn't really built into our DNA until we started talking with Infinite Red, which was originally a remote company. I mean, they started that way. And so when I started kind of absorbing their ideas, Ken and Todd, my two co-founders, then we started kind of, people started drifting away from the office, and that was okay. And I was one of the last stragglers because I was building my home. So I didn't really have a place to work outside of the office. But once we actually did the final merge in October of 2015, then it was definitely 100% all ahead on the remote work. That was going to be, I mean, one co-founder over in Las Vegas, one in the Bay Area, and one in Portland meant that we had no choice. We had to be a remote distributed company.
So do you have an actual office that some people report to, or are you still actually truly completely remote?
We do have an office. Two people work there. It's a mobile developer and a web developer, and so they don't work on the same projects typically. And for all real, intents and purposes, it's really just a co-working space for them. We keep it so that we have somewhere to send mail, and once in a while, the people in the Portland area might meet up there. But I maybe get there a couple times a month at most.
So with the employees that you have at Infinite Red, how many of them had worked remote prior to Infinite Red? And when you bring new people on, do they have previous experience working remote, or are they transitioning out of kind of more of a traditional setting?
Very few have had remote experience coming into Infinite Red. And that is, that still seems to be something that is kind of an anomaly in our industry, even though it shouldn't be. Most people came from working in an office. They've had to adjust, they've had to kind of find ways to, be productive. As we all know, working remotely isn't the same. You don't have the same culture. You don't have the same motivations that you would have walking into an office and sitting down at your desk next to the same people that you've worked with for a while. Surprisingly, it's worked out really well.
So do you have like an onboarding process of, hey, now that you're working remote, this is how we do it?
We're still developing that to some extent because, we brought our two teams together, and then our goal was, okay, now that we're 22 people, we need to really figure out what this means. And I think over the last year, we've gained some really valuable insight. We've been working on it the whole time. We do introduce them to our tools. We tell them, here are some best practices for using Slack, for using, all of the other remote tools that we use. But the way that we really try to do it is to make it where the obvious answer is the right answer. So we're not trying to force people into a certain way of working. There are some things that we have as standards, but we really try to make it so that people don't really think about it. It's just natural. So for example, let's say that someone has something they need to talk with a new person about. They'll just say, "Hey, here's a link. Let's jump into this Zoom video call," and they kind of absorb it from there. So it's a little bit organic at this point. We don't really have a formal way to train people into being remote, but that's a little bit. It's kind of on purpose in some ways.
So what are the top five tools that you're using remote to run your company and operate it?
I would have to say Slack is number one, with Zoom as a very close second. We've tried every video conferencing tool there is, and Zoom seems to be the one with the best quality with the most people in it. So Slack, Zoom, of course we use GitHub. We are using InVision for our designers. That's really great. Let's see here. We also use, of course, Dropbox and some other kind of random tools as well. But those are the primary ones, I would say, that we're on every day. Really, Slack and Zoom are really big. We do use Screen Hero as well for remote pairing, but that's less common.
With Slack, have you looked into using their newest feature with the video chat? Have you found that as an alternative, sticking within Slack, or no?
Yeah, we have. We've done some tests with it. It's got a little ways to go. It blows up your CPU, and the quality isn't that great. I think that it'll be awesome once it's stable. But we're not finding that to be the case quite yet.
Yeah, CPU usage seems to be a big problem with a lot of people with Slack, but it's such a great product. I think people fight through it.
I think Zoom, Zoom also kind of blows up your CPU. What it's doing, though, is it's trading processing power for a tighter bandwidth. So it's really kind of, you get great quality. The bandwidth is very... you don't use a lot of bandwidth. We actually have one of our team members is almost always, two of our team members are almost always on LTE hotspots, and they don't blow through their, they don't blow through their data even with using Zoom for video calls. So that's been a very big plus for us.
Oh man, that's impressive. I had one situation where I had to jump on a Google Hangout over my Verizon LTE, and that sucked up a gig of data like no other.
That's right. Yeah, no, we measure it. They measure it, and they found it to be very, very reasonable.
All right. So, speaking of tools, given the type of work that you do, a lot of development, do you find that do you have it set up rather that your employees are working more kind of autonomously? They're working each on individual tasks, as they see things that need to be done and so on? Or do you have a more collaborative approach where people are working more in teams, continually working on the same project and the same tasks towards the end goal?
It's a little bit of a hybrid, more team-oriented than individual. We typically have two developers and maybe one or two designers on a particular project, plus a project manager. And we like to work very collaborative with the client as well. So we bring the client into our Zoom or into our Slack. We have them use Zoom, things like that. And so people are collaborating quite a bit throughout the day. In fact, I've found, I think that I interact probably more with team members now that we're remote than I did even in the office, because it's just really easy. You don't even have to get up from your desk.
So in managing your team, how do you handle performance feedback? In some traditional corporate settings, there's 360 reviews and that type of thing. But how do you manage your team in that regard? And then kind of a follow-on is one of the terms I heard used recently is when someone starts submarining or they basically drop off the grid. How do you handle those situations?
Yeah, totally. Those are things we think about quite a bit. And so there's three founders, and each of the three founders has a third of the team, plus or minus. And we organize those into what we call guilds. So a guild is essentially, I have one guild, and with I think five people in it, and five or six, and we get together, you know, fairly often on video calls just to kind of hang out, even though we're across different disciplines: designers, mobile developers, web developers. And I also handle their one-on-ones, so I'll do one-on-one video calls. You'll notice a lot of consistency here. We do a lot of video calls. That's really important for a remote company, in my opinion.
Seems to be a very reoccurring theme.
Yes, it is. And I feel like some days I'm on Zoom, you know, 4 hours out of the day. But yeah, I mean, that's, you know, the team aspect of it, as far as the submarining, that's an interesting term. I haven't actually heard that before, but it's really, that is something we think about, people that kind of drop off a little bit. I would say that our CEO, Todd Wirth, is one of the best at kind of just making sure everybody's engaged and, you know, and working. He'll, not every day, but almost every day, he'll send a message to each team member just saying, "Hey, good morning. You know, how's it going?" Just little chit chat, nothing big. He doesn't really have anything to say other than just, you know, "Hey, how you doing? And what's up?" And I think that's, you know, that's not really a remote, only thing. That can be really important in offices as well, but I guess it's a little easier to hide when you're remote.
So how spread out is your team then? If you have enough overlap that you can say good morning and good day, what's the spread of time zones?
Yeah, time zones really the biggest challenge with remote work. So we tend to congregate more on the Pacific time zone. We do have some stragglers in Central and Eastern time zones, our team, about half of us are in the Portland area. Those are mostly people who came from the ClearSight end of things. And then we have some in the Bay Area, some in Louisiana, some in Nevada, one in Ontario, one in Florida. So it's kind of, we're kind of spread out that way. And the stragglers just, you know, try to have enough overlap. They typically are getting up a little earlier than us and getting out of the, you know, done with their workday a little earlier than us, but it works pretty well. We try not to have someone, you know, if we had someone maybe in like Eastern Europe or something, that would be really tough.
Yeah, or even Perth, Australia. I was working on one project once, and I think it was a 12 or 14 hour, I think it was almost 14 hour spread. And man, I had some weird hours for those calls that we had.
We have some Australian clients, and that can be very tough, as well as East Asia.
All right. So now we talked a bit about the time zones and all this. Jamin, what's a typical work day for Jamin look like, given you're working from your home and remote and all that?
Yeah. So my job has changed quite a bit since I was a software engineer. You know, I used to code most of the day. But I'm more just kind of on call. I'm constantly participating in, you know, a little meeting here, a little meeting there. Just making sure that my team is, you know, everything is rolling. They're really great. So I typically don't have a lot to do on the operational side. I just kind of help set up systems and make sure that things are rolling. But I do the scheduling as well. So we might have a meeting in the morning like we did this morning where we discuss our schedule out for the next month or two. And I kind of do that. I might be in a few calls. I answer email. I'm in Slack all the time. Probably half my time is jumping around in Slack. And just kind of that sort of thing. Once in a while, I'll also have my own little project I'm working on as well. And I do a lot of sales. So Todd and I do sales calls as a pair. We'll do a video call and we'll both be on the call. And then we follow up after that with estimates and proposals, things like that. So that's essentially what my days look like. And I don't get to do a lot of coding anymore. So when I do, it's usually kind of late at night. Hey, I'm playing with some Elm or something.
Ooh. So in your sales cycle and working with your clients, you're obviously a remote company. How many of them have you actually met face to face?
Very few, actually. it's kind of interesting. And you know, this is actually one of the pre-qualifications that we do is, if a client's not willing to engage us, just based on a video call, video call basis, I should say, then maybe they're not a great fit for us. We do have a few, where we meet with them more often, in the office, if they're in Portland, or maybe down in the Bay Area, my co-founder Ken might meet with them. But those are the exception rather than the rule.
And what tool are you using for your video call with your clients?
It's always Zoom. Yeah. We just love Zoom for both internal and external, communication. And so we have them download it and we kind of teach them to use it even during the sales part of it. And, it works well that way.
Excellent. So switching topics just slightly. So you personally, what are some distractions that you face and how do you deal with them?
Yeah. So obviously kids, I've young kids and they don't always respect the door, that I have on my office. My wife can sometimes, poke her head in and say, hey, I'm running to the store. Can you watch our youngest, while I'm away? And that's usually okay. But that can be a distraction as well.
So what's the age range that they are?
My oldest is 11 and he's my only boy. And then I have three girls, ages, 8, 5, and 3. Yeah. So those are the primary distraction. The sink's plugged. Can you come? Fix it? That sort of thing that normally would wait until I get home.
It seems to me that the Wi-Fi going down, I know about it from my wife and my daughter before I've realized it's down often. And it's like instantaneous. The Wi-Fi is down. You better fix it.
So exactly.
In fighting isolation and being disconnected, what do you do for yourself to avoid that? I mean, you have your family locally, but you're still part of a much larger team, and it's easy to get disconnected. And how do you build that camaraderie?
We do a lot of video calls. We do within our, remember I was talking about the guilds earlier, we'll do like a video call with all of the guild members and we just sit there and kind of shoot the breeze. It's really informal just to kind of get some bonding time. We do the 1 week a year where we all work together. We also do every 2 weeks, we'll do an all team meeting on Zoom where we have 22 people on the same video call and we give out announcements and we talk about things and we joke and, all that sort of thing. So that's important, for bonding with our teammates. But as far as outside, I have noticed that when I'm not out and about, when I just, walk up the stairs to my office, that I don't get out of my house many days. And, so you do have to, I've noticed you do have to make more of an effort to go to things. I actually really enjoy going to meetups in Portland because of that. It's not too far away. Usually I can get one of my team members to jump in with me and we head down to, the Elixir meetup or the Elm meetup.
That resonates well with me. That is forcing yourself to get out of the house.
Exactly.
In Northern Wisconsin here, most of my trips out of the house involve taking my daughter to school and that's like just a half mile away. There's no stoplights there's two stop signs. But beyond that, it's easy
yes,
to just kind of stay.
And I think it's important to get out of the house, even if you maybe don't feel like you need it. It's still important to do, just to plan it, just put it on your schedule. Hey, I'm going to go do this thing or I'm going to go do that thing. Because otherwise you end up just being kind of a hermit. The crazy thing is I don't feel like I'm lacking for social interaction at all. I mean, talking to people all day long. But it's more about just kind of getting out and about.
There's an oatmeal cartoon that it gets a little bit crude, but it starts off with the progression of when you work from home, and it comes from it ultimately ends up with like an utter slob of a blob of just being stuck at home. And Right. It's funny because there's some truth to the risk of that happening.
Right, exactly.
Pants optional.
Yes.
This is true.
Yes, except on video chats if you want to get up for a cup of coffee or something.
Oh, man.
You just kind of slide off the screen and before you stand up.
Yes.
You flip that video off and say, sorry, I'm trying to conserve bandwidth.
Exactly. We actually do that though, like if we're getting up to go grab a cup of coffee or something, we'll just flip the video off and that's fine. You know, like it actually works great.
Yeah. So you've made that culturally acceptable to just be able to like take a moment.
Right. Yeah. No, we totally do that.
That's awesome. Well, I have something to admit, and that is I have actually always worked with pants. Like for my psyche to be like, I'm going to engage in work.
Right.
I have to have pants on.
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah, I rarely wear pants. I'm usually wearing shorts, you know, just because it's easy.
Yeah.
Sure. So with the availability to work at so many different times a day, in fact, I mean, being able to get out of the house, we didn't really discuss if you do work strictly in your home office or elsewhere, but when or where do you find yourself most productive in terms of time of day or perhaps a location if you sometimes work elsewhere besides home?
Right. I don't work outside of the home very often. Once in a while, I will work from a coffee shop or something like that. My days are rarely, because of my position at the company, my days are rarely judged solely on like head down productivity. Usually when I'm doing something head down productive, that means that I haven't delegated very well. So, you know, my job is very much to be more on call and thinking a little bit, it sounds a little cliche, but I have to think a little more big picture, like looking at the systems and our sales and things like that. So I haven't found that any particular time of day is more productive, at least now, because of my current position. I just kind of take things as they come. I do. I will say that I do sometimes really value late nights after my kids have gone to bed, and I'll jump on and I'll get some things done just because there are a few distractions from either end, home or from work.
All right. So sounds like you find different times a day, a little bit here and a little bit there, which are good spots to get different jobs done.
Totally. Yeah, absolutely.
Do you have any strategies or systems to help keep your productivity up during those work times? Any tools maybe?
I've tried different things, rescue time and different types of clocks and things like that. I do find that keeping a fairly clean inbox is important for me. I actually recently wrote an article on our blog, which is shift.infinite.red. I wrote an article about inbox zero and how I keep my inbox clean and free from, you know, subscription clutter and things like that. So that's really important. One of the nice things about being remote is it's extremely easy to disengage and, you know, just focus. So really what you need to do is you say, hey, I'm dropping offline for an hour. If you really need me, just send a text. And then you shut off Slack, you shut off Zoom, you know, you shut off all the distractions and you get something done. So remote can be extremely great for focus time, kind of Zen mode when you need to. The biggest thing though is like people can't look in your office and see that your head's down working on something. You do need to let people know in Slack, hey, I'm going to be gone for X amount of time.
Yeah. So you just kind of give a present status and this is what to expect.
We have a roll call channel and we just post in there, hey, everybody, I'm here. And then, oh, I am going away for a little bit, that sort of thing. And it's really, really helpful.
So this next question, this is one of the things that has affected me. And I've shared with a number of people online before that I have some pretty significant hearing loss. And working remote has really helped me in a lot of ways in that I can use headphones to manage the volume on calls, and I'm actually able to hear a lot better than I am in person, which surprises me when I go into an office and keep asking people to repeat things. But right. For you, is there a condition or a disability or some type of situation like that that remote working really assists or helps you to overcome or
improve? Yeah, you bet. So Jonathan, you had let me know that you'd be asking this question. So I asked my wife if I could share a little bit, something a little more personal. And she said totally that I could. My wife has clinical depression. And one of the great things about being able to work from home is that I'm around. And it really helps her kind of her ability to manage that condition. She's able to, you know, I'm there, even if I'm not, you know, helping her out or engaging in whatever she's doing. She knows that I'm around. And that's a really, really an awesome thing for managing. You know, when I work from an office, she'd often, you know, say, hey, when are you going to be home? You know, I really like having you around. And obviously, sometimes I couldn't tear myself away. I had things to do. And that was tough. But now that I'm working from home, that really has, you definitely notice the difference. She really enjoys it and it helps, overall her, you know, her condition, what she's dealing with.
Yeah. There was a period in my life where, I struggled with depression too. And for one portion of it, I was working from home too. And I think it was a similar situation for me, just reversed in that my wife was there. But yeah, being able to provide support for each other was a huge benefit.
Yeah, totally. It makes such a difference. Even when I don't really feel like I'm doing anything, I'm just kind of here working, you know. But for her, she knows I'm there, and that makes a difference.
So looking more at the long term, you know, you're running a company or part of running a company, and but do you see long term that you would continue to focus on just working remote work if, say, you were to move on from Infinite Red,
right?
Whether you or not, but whether you would stick with that, or whether you would want to go back at any point to actually working on site or commuting,
right,
or whatever it would be, to actually to an office again.
Yeah. So I would say that my exit plan from Infinite Red is going to be feet first. I don't intend to go anywhere, but obviously you never know. And I would say that I would only take a commute job, as I call them now. I would only take one of those types of jobs if there really were no other options. And I know that there are other options out there right now for me. So 99% sure that I will be working remotely for the rest of my career, for sure. There's too big of benefits. There are downsides and you have to work around those, but the benefits are way too big for me.
So thanks so much for this interview and just opening up with us in this conversation. So if people want to find you online and connect with you, where should they go?
You can find me on Twitter, at Jamin Holmgren. You can also look me up on Facebook. I don't mind. I'm not like super private about my Facebook stuff. So you can friend me on there. I'm totally cool with that. GitHub, Jamin Holmgren. And then also, of course, my company website, infinite.red. So feel free to, you know, just connect up with me. I love connecting with new people. It's been a huge, benefit to me being able to connect up with other people around the world.
Excellent. Thank you so much.
Yeah. Thanks a lot for having me on. Appreciate it. It was a lot of fun. Yeah.
So this segment of the show we're calling What's the Buzz? And it can consist of tips or news or that type of thing. So Ari, I'm going to ask you, what's the buzz and what's your tip your tip for the week?
Well, actually I was recently introduced to a new software, which it's both for Mac or Windows. So go at it with whatever you got. It's called Franz, Franz. Their website is Meet Franz. It's basically all your messengers that you might use, whether that's Facebook Messenger, WhatsApp, Slack, there's a whole list of them that, and there's even plugins to add in more. And you can basically just keep adding these messengers. And so instead of going from Google Hangouts to something in Messenger and Facebook Messenger, something in Slack, et cetera, et cetera, you can have everything in one app with notifications all happening in one app, and everything's very centralized, which is nice, especially if you're working in kind of this remote environment where you start bringing in all these different tools. Here's everything in one location.
That's really cool. It's messenger overload. I think whenever I join a new project or a new team and they say, oh, we're using this tool. And it's like, oh man, just one more to add. So that sounds really useful. So my, my news for the week is recently in November and December of 2016, there were two events that were put on. The first one was Out of Office, that was put on by HumanMade. And the second was the Remote Working Conference, which I had a chance to speak at. And what was interesting is both these events were online and had a fairly large following. I believe Out of Office had over 1,000 people tuned in for that event. And the Remote Working Conference had a couple hundred, and then more so watching the recordings after the fact. But in the sphere of remote working, we're starting to see more and more events crop up related to this topic and how to be successful at it.
Yeah, you know, you presented at one of those, didn't you?
I did. It was the Remote Working Conference, and the talk that I gave was Remote is Where the Heart Is. And I basically covered in 20 minutes or so where I started to, how I started working remote and kind of my experience and the things I've learned. And it's recorded and it's on YouTube. And so we'll post a link to that in the show notes. So,
definitely. I haven't had an opportunity to watch your presentation either yet. So I am looking forward to that.
I haven't watched it either. And that's on purpose. So, Jamin, do you want to chime in here too? Is there a tool or a tip that you find personally exciting?
Let's see. Well, I do use a tool pretty much every day with my video calls, and actually I've been using it here on this podcast, called Shush. It's a Mac app that allows you to have push to talk. I mapped it to my function key, so I can just push function or double tap it, and then it's push to mute. So I think that's on the Mac App Store. It's called Shush, and I use it a lot. It's really useful. Just a little tiny utility app.
I've also been using that, and it is like my new favorite app. It's actually awesome. Very nice not having to hunt through Windows to find that mute button for whatever app you're using.
Yeah, and it works globally. So, that's important, because sometimes the shortcut key might not work on whatever app you're using if you're not focused on it.
Yep.
Right. And I can attest to that from my experience, that I tried to go the frugal way, shall we say, and avoid paying, because it is $4.99 for the app.
Uh-huh.
So yeah. I said, let me go ahead and figure out a keyboard shortcut and do it myself. And I programmed in one shortcut, and then I was inside an app trying to do something, and crazy things started happening. I didn't even know that keyboard shortcut existed.
Oh,
and so it took a while, but I finally settled on one, and it's worked solid. So, I'm happy with a keyboard shortcut that I have. But
you should share that.
I'm definitely looking into going with Shush, because it'll kind of take that control of that and make sure it behaves.
Yeah. But that totally I resonate with that, not wanting to spend money on something that seems so simple. But then when all of a sudden done, it's like, well, I built a better mousetrap. It's like, may not work that much greater. So excellent. So Ari, if people want to find you online, where can they look you up?
Well, I have my website, which I don't blog very often these days, but it's there, ariwinokur.com. And then I can be found on basically every type of social media that exists, and any of those other things, GitHub and all that, at Ari Winokur. So I'm everywhere there. What about you, Jonathan?
Well, probably the easiest way to find my center hub of the internet is jdsharp.com. and I pretty much link out to everything else there. But also our website for this podcast is remote.works, and we'll have everything linked there. So I'd like to thank you for listening to the Remote Works podcast. If you find this show helpful, please be sure to subscribe in iTunes and leave us a review with your name and website, and we may read it in a future episode. If you have a comment or question about this episode or a topic related to remote work, you can also leave us a voicemail on our website, which we'll take into consideration for future shows.
And if you'd like any transcript or show notes, please visit remote.works/2 for this episode being episode 2. And additionally, if you'd like to recommend any guests for the show, please visit us on the web at remote.works and fill out a form.
And finally, I like to tell my daughter every day when I drop her off at school, go be awesome. And that's complete with a fist bump. She's in the 3rd grade now. So I'd like to say the same to you. Go forth and be awesome. Thanks you for listening. This is the Remote Works Podcast. This podcast is a production and copyright of Cultivate Now. All rights reserved.